Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Jeff Blair is in for Bob McCowan. And you're in for one hell of a show. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to Primetime. A Friday version. The Jays game is only an hour away at the Rogers Center. Sold out Rogers Center. The first of three against the Detroit Tigers. Ari Dickey will be on the mound for the Blue Jays. Matt Boyd.
You think the Tigers will even show up?
Oh, I don't know, Dave. So? I don't know. This has got sweep written all over it. Perk, you know it.
You're going to take a broom to the ballpark this weekend?
Yeah, no. I will not be carrying a broom. To the ballpark.
Other Rogers employees will be. I can promise you that.
I will not be.
Now this is the Dave Perkins I remember.
He's back. Yeah, he was back.
He's back.
I want to talk about baseball. But before we do that, just to confirm that Dave Perkins is back. Dave, Jonas Valanciunas. What do you think of the contract?
$60 million for a guy who couldn't play in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's more
like now that you give him all this money, that means you have to play him, and the coach doesn't think he's worth playing. Oops.
So you like it?
That's a bad move to me. I just wanted to make sure.
But it's a bad team. And you know, like we said,
this is beautiful.
The same people who are going overboard about the Blue Jays right now, 8 months ago were telling me that the Raptors were going to be in the NBA Finals and that Kyle Lowry was going to be the MVP. Those are the same kind of commentators.
And it all came true.
Yeah, that's right. And they, you know, we know how that all turned
out. Yet you just finished telling us that the Blue Jays were going to run away with the Eastern Division.
I think they will. I don't think the rest of the division's any good. I've been saying that for 4 months.
All right. Okay.
But anyway, it's neither here nor there.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to, you know, just.
You want me to dump on some?
Well, I mean, you know, we were just. You were so nice and cuddly.
You see how they treat me here, David? You won't come back.
Yeah, my goodness. You're a real outsider here.
All right. No. We'll get this thing. We'll get this train back on track.
We'll be singing Kumbaya soon.
So, what does not belong here? Jays, Mets, Cubs, and Astros going right now would be in the playoff position. The Cubs are in. I mean, they've got... It's got to be the collapse of all collapses for them not to.
Toronto would have to collapse not to make it.
Toronto would have to collapse. Houston, yeah, I think they probably have to. And the Mets, I mean, who the hell saw the Mets 6.5 up on the Washington Nationals?
Did you see that play last night? That 1-3-1
put out?
That's when you know your season's going pretty well.
Yeah, especially when the pitcher, the ball goes off his foot, runs right over to first base and makes the play. But Mets, Cubs, Astros, Jays. Dave, what's in the water here? These four teams going to the playoffs. It can't happen, can it?
It's parity. Well, baseball's always had parity. Baseball of the four major sports has always had the most number of winners. Just because they haven't happened here, that doesn't change anything. But I don't have any problem with it. I mean, we're still going to have the Cardinals in. They're in every year. You know, Yankees, I don't know if they're going to, get in as a wild card.
The Dodgers will probably.
That'll be the first time in 3 years. Dodgers never win anything.
Yeah. They'll be in, and there'll be somebody will beat them in the first round.
This isn't like the NFL where the same teams win every year and the same teams suck every year.
Or the NBA, which is even more.
Or the NBA, which is more the same.
Yeah. The NFL, there's pretty good parity. NFL, you see teams, they rotate, unless they're the Oakland Raiders.
Or the Minnesota Vikings.
Vikings could jump up this year.
Buffalo Bills have made the playoffs since Caesar was a corporal. I mean, come on. What do you mean the rotate? When's the last time the Bills make the playoff? Is it this century? This millennium?
Last time was the Music City Miracle.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So what
Tennessee
was that, 99?
Titans. Wow. They have the longest stretch of not making of the postseason, so that we can say that at least.
So they're like the Blue Jays of the NFL.
Well,
the longest.
The team that surprised me the most is the Astros. Because remember a year ago, what a gong show they were? Mm-hmm. Everybody was ripping them.
Oh, they were just the way they were handling players.
The number one pick.
Well, they actually had, didn't they have two number one?
Yeah. And they screwed them, and they screwed up signing the first one, although he blew his arm out.
Right.
You know, I mean, the other thing, too, is if you look at it, you look at Boston, they just fire Sherrington as an analytics guy, and they bring in Dombrowski, who absolutely isn't. Mets analytics, Sandy Alderson was one of the first to really throw. Bean gets all the credit, but Alderson was the first guy in Oakland.
Yeah.
You know, Cubs analytics, obviously, Epstein. You know, the Cardinals are not hugely, but they are kind of analytics driven.
The Cardinals are more like the Orioles used to be. They just do things. They got away that
they play right. Yeah.
They play
the game well. Yeah.
The Pirates are heavily analytical, and the Blue Jays are. I mean, why did Anthopoulos made all these moves? Because the Pythagorean theorem of runs scored said they should be a 95 win team. So you know, I mean, this is for a lot of teams this year. This is a victory for the spreadsheets in Major League Baseball.
In Houston's case, it's also how pathetic they were as finally some of that's come to
fruition. But you know what, Dave? It's funny.
Altuve is probably one of the hardest outs in baseball. I mean, these are guys that have come up through the system.
It's true, but there's a lot of teams in baseball that had high picks and blew it for a long time. And some of that is because baseball, more than any other sport, if you have a certain agent, teams won't draft your players. Mm. And that's kind of always screwed up the amateur draft there. Like, teams will not draft Scott Boras' clients. Mm-hmm. So Houston has been bad, but they've done a good job of drafting and developing.
And I think the thing with Houston is most people looked at Houston and said, okay, this is a team that's on the right path. They're probably going to be a couple of years away. But, you know, they went out, they made some nice additions in the offseason. And, I mean, Houston, give them credit. They did stick to the one sort of tried and true thing with baseball. They got pitchers.
And they got cheap bullpen guys.
They got cheap bullpen guys. Yes.
Yep.
Which is huge. You can do that.
Yeah, and it also helps when, you know, I mean, we talked about, it was a guy, Chris Carter. Chris Carter can't even get a game now, right?
Yeah, he's not even playing.
And
he had 37 homers or 35 homers last year.
It helps when just about every position player you draft or pick turns out to be really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But, to me, the surprise is the Mets. I mean, as good as their pitching is, this is a team that, couldn't hit. I mean, they've hit like 43 home runs this month. Yeah. They had like 70 up to that point.
Terrible division, though.
But, I mean, it shouldn't have been the Washington. Everyone and their mother was, basically crowning.
But Atlanta's
crowning
been horrible
Washington.
Since spring training.
Yeah.
The Marlins are always horrible.
But Atlanta kind of threw in the towel early too, with the new ballpark coming on board in a couple of years. They
weren't interested.
Yeah, they're
Phillies
scaling
have been
down.
Awful for a couple of years. I mean, that's there's a lot of easy wins out of that division.
And the Marlins just
Yeah.
It doesn't help when Stanton gets hurt, but even before that, the Marlins just fell apart.
Well, I think you could argue. I could say the Mets of those four teams maybe are the biggest surprise. But the question is going to be, who's the last man standing in those four teams? That's what, because a lot of it's just going to be window dressing over, hey, they had that freak year or that surprising year. One of these teams expects to go far. Could be a couple of those teams go far in the postseason. You talked about Houston in the last hour, and to me, they still are the most complete team in the American League. I know that's not what a lot of
Kansas City's pretty good.
Well, but I would take the rotation of Houston ahead of Kansas City's Keuchel, McHugh, even Feldman. Look at Feldman's numbers post-All-Star.
Yeah,
he's really turned the corner.
They got McCullers.
McCullers come back.
Yeah. So I like their rotation and the fact that they could beat you with the long ball. They could beat you with the National League small ball if that's the way the game's going. I like that.
Which of those teams, Mets, Cubs, Astros, do you see any of them being in danger of... I mean, this is the thing.
Yeah,
so
the Cubs have got 110 years or 108 years of history saying that
they're going to find the worst way to lose.
Yeah, they'll do it. They'll do something.
But I mean, their leads are so healthy that you could see them making the playoffs. I don't know. Do any of these three
so
teams?
So it's going to be Cubs in the wild card against
Pirates.
Pirates.
Yeah. Pirates. Yeah.
So, I mean, you got two teams with a lot of wins there.
Yeah.
And one of them's, you know, going to last one game.
Well, at least, you know what, Perk? A decade ago, one of them wasn't even getting in.
Right.
I mean, it's still the hardest sport to make the playoffs in.
Sure.
I mean, I would feel so bad for Pirates fans if that team goes out.
Again,
after one game. I mean, it's possible, depending on who the Cubs run up against them. Of those teams, though, do you see any of those teams going on to the World Series? Or do you think it's... That's kind of a reach.
Oh, Toronto's going to the World Series. There's no question.
But that's a
Toronto's got a shot.
That's a mug's game.
I mean, it's a mug's game. It's sports radio. Well, the whole thing's a mug's game.
The Cardinals are the heavy favorite in the National League. I think it would be a surprise if either the Cubs or the Mets get there.
You know what? The Cardinals are a funny team. Like, when you look back at them in their history, some of their best teams, like, just blow it in the playoffs. And some of their worst teams win it. Like they remember they won the World Series with 86 wins in 2006. Mm-hmm. That was the lowest at that time. And how many times, Dave, did the Cardinals have 100 wins, 105 wins, and they just blew it? So this has got Cardinals flame out written over them. Oh, yeah. If you look at their history, they won the World Series in 2006 with 86 wins, I think. Mm-hmm. In 2011, when they won the World Series, that was a team that almost imploded during the season. Yeah.
Although none of that really has any bearing on this year's team.
I know, but it's just funny. Like, if you if they march and storm to the World Series, we'll all look back and laugh. But their history, their best teams, for whatever reason, it's their worst teams that make the playoffs.
But is Kershaw going to fall apart again? That's a legitimate question too. You know, because only one of those teams is going to make it, right? Dodgers or Giants?
Yeah, I just don't trust the Dodgers. I can't trust them at all.
After last year, you mean, because of Kershaw
because of Kershaw. I don't.
It's also the team they're playing. Like, you know, 3 World Series in the last 5 years. Who's betting against them?
Right.
Even though it's an odd number of years, so they're not going to win.
They take a year back. They take a year off usually. But and look, I mean, Madison Bumgarner's his most recent outing was really strong. I don't know. I look at these teams and. I mean, the one that I keep scratching my head about more than any other is just the Mets. And I know it's a bad division, but I can't imagine the Washington Nationals are 6.5 games bad. Even with Denard Span being hurt and Worth being hurt, they still have Scherzer.
I still go back. It's karma. The year that they thought
Strasburg,
we're going to the World Series, we'll just set Strasburg up. We'll have him for the next 10 World Series, blah, 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 blah. To me, that was... Boy, you idiotic. Take a shot when you got the shot.
The window in sports is like this. You run through that window. You don't say, well, let's wait
and
see. That's right.
You don't just...
People in this market, I mean, people are like, oh, we gave up Jeff Kent. It didn't matter that you gave up Jeff Kent. As long as you win those World Series, that's all anyone remembers. Jeff Kent's a Hall of Famer. Doesn't matter.
Hopefully people will remember that when Daniel Norris is winning 21 games and challenging.
If the Jays win the World Series, it won't matter.
That's why people say, like, okay, why are they risking Stroman's knee? Like... That is exactly my point. If this guy can pitch, you might never get this chance again.
Right.
You might not have David Price
all
after
hands
this
on
year.
Deck.
You know, Burley and Dickey, and Burley's contract is up. You know, they're older guys.
Hey, you've only got Bautista and Encarnacion for another year.
At these current contracts.
Yeah,
right.
Eventually, you're going to have to pay Donaldson, too.
Yeah.
You shoot the gun when you get the bullets.
If you people who say, oh, don't risk Stroman. Look, you're not going to risk him if he can't physically pitch. But if he can physically pitch and he's ready to pitch, you're going for it. You may never get a chance this good.
You don't have
again.
To tell anyone in this market that. I mean, it's been 22 long years.
But whenever we talk about it, Dave, I get these Twitter people who come in and say, don't risk Stroman. I'm like,
the other thing
you
to keep in mind,
idiots.
as several people in the Jays front office will tell you, we're talking a knee injury. We are not talking an arm injury. We're not talking an elbow. We're not talking a shoulder. It's a knee injury.
They're not going to compromise his health if a long-term thing.
Exactly.
Right. Thing.
Exactly.
Very different.
Everything that they're saying is it's going to be easy to tell if he's favoring the knee. I mean, you'll be able to tell. You'll be able to tell. And, you know, but you can get really caught up, and the Nationals are the perfect example. You can get really caught up kind of outthinking the thing and looking ahead, and everybody wants to, you know, be sustaining and all that and have a sustainable run. But I agree with you guys. At some point, this is your opportunity. You take it.
Yep. And it, once again, I said this about the Nationals the other day. That whole trade they made for Papelbon to put on top of Storen was because Storen blew up in the World Series or in the postseason last year, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's, once again, you're managing, you're making – deals with an eye saying, well, we're going to be in the postseason, so we're going to do this. Well, you know.
And honestly.
They got no handle on their own team.
The same thing last year with the Oakland Athletics. I mean, they traded for Jeff Samardzija. Right. And brain cramp. Jason Hamill, they right. lost that. Well, they didn't lose, but they traded that kid, Addison Russell, who's
a
tremendous player.
They traded for Lester.
Yeah. Traded for Lester. Mm-hmm. And
then they blew a 5-run lead in their wild card game.
In the eighth inning.
All luck.
Every sport, you can look at a team that has missed the window. They didn't make a move or they made a move. But a lot of the times, it's the inactivity. A lot of the time, it's what they didn't do
right.
to put a team mm-hmm. over the top. You know, Portland Trailblazers is a great example of that. They're done now. And they were right there, and then...
San Diego Chargers.
And then you get into this cycle of mediocrity, and it's a hard cycle to break out of. So when you get a chance, I think you owe it to your fan base, especially in a city like Toronto, where... The fans have shown. I mean, this series, you said this whole series is sold out, right, Jeff?
Yes.
This weekend?
Yeah.
I mean, look at that. That's 150,000 people taking on a pretty mediocre Tigers team this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're filling the seats. You owe it to your fan base to go out there and say, we're going to do everything in our power to win and win now.
Well, yeah. I mean, go back 4 months to the NBA trade deadline. And what did Masai say? Well, let's see what we got here. They weren't shooting the gun.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't trying. I think they knew in their mind.
I think
they were going to get caved in.
That wasn't a team on the precipice of winning,
no.
or even with that
window.
But
it was like a 3 or 4 seed in the East at that point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, with a whipped up fan base, and they didn't do anything.
No salary cap in baseball makes it a bit easier to maneuver. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
And
but every team has a salary cap. It's called a budget.
But once you go over the NBA in luxury tax, you're paying $2 to one. Right. It becomes a very aggressive system.
In the Raptors' case, I think they knew their team wasn't good enough to win.
No, I think you're right. But, I think I looked at the Raptors. They were a bit. Remember when the Red Wings got really good? There was that year where they had to take a step back. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They made the playoffs, surprised, or they looked really good. Then they took a step back. And I'm with you guys. I think Masai, and he can't come out and say it publicly, but I think mm-hmm. he looked at the team last year and thought, you know, the year. And I'll give him credit. I think he looked at what he had instead of what he had the year before and just analyzed his team. And I think he thought, let's see what this is about. Let's see where these guys can go.
And who's to say he didn't kick tires? I mean, NBA trade deadline is not like the NHL trade deadline
right.
or you know, baseball trade deadline. We saw some big moves
this year. Yeah.
Certainly this year. It's a little different. It's usually... pretty much because of the salaries that have to move back and forth, there's not a lot of activity. It wasn't like at the NBA trade deadline. It fails my memory right now. Elliot might remember who the big guys who moved at the NBA trade deadline were, but there's generally not the difference between getting blown out and swept in the first round and going to the NBA final. There's not that guy just sitting there for you.
Not just because you're kind of the veteran scribe here, Mr. Perkins, but I wasn't in the city when... you know, in 85, the first division title, I was covering the 92-93 World Series for paper in Montreal, so it wasn't the same thing. The excitement level we might see in this city surrounding this team, they go to the playoffs. How would you, I'm asking you to compare a hypothetical, how different do you think it'd be from 85 or 92 and 93? And 93 was kind of a...
There was no internet, there was certainly no social media back then, so...
Yeah.
You didn't have...
Nobody was tweeting you complaining that Ben Revere should be leading off.
I tell you what people did in those days. They wrote letters. And I would get 30, 40 letters a week, handwritten letters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always about baseball. It was always, you know, how come Jimmy Key isn't starting this game? And how come so-and-so isn't batting second? Like, it was
mm-hmm.
you know, now it's, you know, 10 and 12-letter words.
Mm-hmm.
At all times, and everybody's an idiot except the guy who writes the tweet mm-hmm. or the message, right? Everybody knows everything. Everybody knows better. The manager's always an idiot. Well, he was always an idiot back then, too, according to people, right?
Right.
People would say, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's blah, blah, blah.
All right, here's
some... I mean, you hear this today. You had some guy today tweeting that somebody didn't bunt enough or something.
The guy called in. Yeah, he wasn't certain that Gibbons could manage a team because they didn't bunt enough.
They're going to score 900.
Oh, they're having a hard time scoring. 100 score runs almost, more than the next team.
Almost 900 runs, and somebody wants them to bunt. Like,
you know, Jeff, it's going to be nuts here.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, Dave, you and I are going to be working the hockey, and we're going to be watching the baseball. George, ask Kelly this question. Nick and I are watching the playoffs.
You know, because we always used to say that if the Leafs ever made the Stanley Cup final, a bunch of us would just leave.
The last two springs have been outside
the Raptors
arena.
People are dying for something to cheer for.
People are exactly. You know what, that's where these games are.
And I think to Elliot's point, and I was in my last year of university when the Leafs had their little run. It was a great year to be a Toronto sports fan, 93. The Leafs got to the Western Conference Final. Mm. And, of course, the Jays were the back end of their two World Series. And it was a different era. It was a different time. You know, the Flowers were coming out.
Now the Argos were good.
Yeah, and the Argos were good. It's been doomsday in this city for 2 decades. And you can go through every team, except the Argos have won a couple of championships. But still, it's over a 20-year span. But TFC, they can't make the playoffs. The Jays, well-documented, longest stretch of any team in North America. The Leafs, we don't have to get into that. And the Raptors, one playoff series win in 20 years. It will be nuts because there's an insatiable appetite for sport here and for a winning sport culture and franchise. And we haven't had it in forever.
Insatiable appetite for a win.
A big Blue Jays town. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, the only time in my lifetime, when I was born in 1970, that anybody has challenged the Maple Leafs for the top of the sporting poll here was 85 to 95 Jays. They were right with them.
And the 91-93, they were far bigger than the Maple Leafs.
All right, here's the thing I wanted. You're not on Twitter, are you?
No.
Should go on because I think people would be really nice to you.
I don't trust myself.
Now I really want you to go on.
Let's pretend Twitter existed in 1992. First World Series.
Oh.
1992, it's, let's say, what is it? August 28th, 1992. What would the three trending topics, Blue Jays topics on Twitter be in 1992?
In August of 92, and 92 was absolutely backwards from this year. 92, they led
right
from the get-go. They had a terrific offense, but they led from the get-go. And then the pitching completely fell apart. And I think the month of August, they had the highest ERA in baseball history of any team that went to the postseason. The ERA was like 580 or 590 in the month of August. Fell apart.
Let me just interject, by the way. In 1992 in this state, the Milwaukee Brewers beat the Jays 22-2.
Right, and so that was the first game with 31 hits.
David Cohn, right?
That was the day after they traded for Cohn.
But didn't he start that game?
No, he started the next game and walked 7 guys a career high. Yeah, okay, and the Brewers stole 8 bases and kicked the snot out of the Jays. People went nuts. People were going crazy. One guy called in, and I remember called the Star, and he was adamant that the Jays stop billing themselves as American League least leaders. He said, "Hey, they're not leaders. They're frauds." And he's just screaming. And there were 7 games in front or 6 games in front, and people were going nuts. So extrapolate this by 5 million.
All right,
and you'd have
what
would happen now?
Okay, what?
All the people who called in, they hated, they didn't like Cito because he didn't do anything. He just got guys to play better than they ever played before, a lot of them. Guys like Devon White, who were all-stars.
Yeah. And put all their egos on the side and played together.
Little things like that, like Devo, a head case before, out of baseball 2 years later. But for those 5 years with Cito, he was an all-star. Nobody ever remembers that, you know. But people were down on the manager, down on the pitching coach.
Okay, so Cito sucks was number one. I would say
the pitching would be number one.
Okay, pitching sucks would
pitching
be the number one.
Pitching going berserk.
Okay.
Would be number one. Cito, they'd be after him. And then when Cohn lost his first game, that would have been the worst trade in history. What is Gillick doing? How could you possibly trade this, you know?
You know what, Jeff? You know what people forget about that Jays team is? Okay, before 92... they had crushing failures.
Yes.
Yeah.
85 up 3-1.
87.
Lost. 87. Lost 7 in a row. To
89.
End the year.
Ricky Henderson stuck it.
89. 91, which you talked about earlier. So they, they were a good team and they were a popular team and they drew 4 million. But they would get into the postseason or around the postseason, and they would lose in the most heartbreaking fashion. And that's what people would talk about. Like, how?
Here we go.
And even at the start of that 92 series against Oakland, Elliot,
it started out badly, and everyone
was like, they're done.
Morris lost game one, and it was like, this is going to be terrible.
Mm.
Yep.
So
they lost game one of each of the three. You know,
in that period.
And you were talking yesterday that, you talk about the biggest home runs in Toronto history, Joe Carter, Roberto Alomar, and you brought up everybody forgets Ed Sprague in 92.
Yeah.
Sprague, the pinch hit.
Versus Atlanta. Yeah.
Jeff Reardon.
Yeah.
Off Jeff Reardon.
And I wasn't covering that game live. I remember it in TV, the shot at Jeff Reardon's face.
Yep.
He came up in the over. The guy who looked like Eddie Murphy came up. Who was that? Derek Bell.
Looked like Eddie Murphy.
Not even like Eddie Murphy.
A little bit.
The hell did he look Bell. Like?
A light-skinned Eddie Murphy. Trust me on this.
Oh.
Derek Bell.
All right, all right.
They rinsed him. They rinsed him the next year.
He was gone after 92.
Yeah, but they were going to get rid of him in spring training because all the veterans took the World Series check. There was a new car that had just come out, and three or four of the veterans bought these cars in Florida. There was some dealer. It was like a $30,000 car, a lot of money then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there was, I forget the name of the car, but I wasn't a car guy. Three or four veterans bought it, and Bell was a rookie, and he went out and bought one. And all the veterans went, wait a minute. So then something else happened, and he bought a second car. So he bought two brand new cars. And somebody said, Derek, why would you buy the second car? He said, what if the first one breaks down? That was his, good
logic.
His answer.
It's good logic.
And everybody in the club, all the veterans in the clubhouse went, and they rinsed them.
That was it.
Not long after.
That is, by the way, one of my favorite Perkins words.
Rinsed them.
Well, it's right up there with Terry Jones when he used to talk about guys getting... I'm sorry, Larry Wood. You remember Larry Wood at the Calgary...
I remember Woody, sure.
Larry Wood at the Calgary Herald would always talk about somebody getting derricked. Yeah. It's when they derricked the coach.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what that car was, but it'll come to me. But
so there you go. Well, that's good. So if Twitter existed... If Twitter existed in 92, that would have been... See, he was probably happy Twitter didn't exist in 92.
Hey, the abuse Cito took was ridiculous.
I agree.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, see, I wasn't in the city.
It's so
then
easy
when that was
to win
on.
Two World Series.
Why did he just so much tea when he brought a championship to a city that was dying for a championship? Not one, but two. Because you're right. The amount of and I, you know, we weren't or at least I wasn't covering sports at that point.
No,
but he took a lot of criticism.
Yeah, he did because he had a team where he basically sent out the same lineup every day, and there was a bunch of switch hitters in that lineup too.
That's right.
So he never pinch hit. And that was people say, he doesn't pinch hit. Well, and I'd say, who's he supposed to pinch hit for? You know, he's got a platoon catching situation.
Everyone wanted Tony La Russa, who, by the way, with those incredible Oakland teams, won all of one. He needed an earthquake to win one championship, but he always was managing.
And Bobby Cox, with 15 years of three first ballot Hall of Famers, got beat 14 times with the best team in baseball.
Yeah.
You know, won one World Series because he ran into Mike Hargrove. Right? That's a good way to put it.
No, that's...
You know, he was lucky enough to catch Mike Hargrove.
That's right.
Otherwise, Cox would have lost every single year. You know, you go back to 85, we talked about that earlier, where he, you know, Blue Jays should have won that in 85, too.
I love the way you put that. He ran into Mike Hargrove. We got some primetime bullets we're going to deal with, so we'll take a break, and then we'll come back with the primetime bullets. It's a Friday roundtable on Sportsnet.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Primetime, the Friday Roundtable, the stretch drive, whatever you want to call it. Blue Jays baseball. Blue Jays baseball is half an hour away from the Rogers Center. It's the Jays and the Detroit Tigers start their three-game series. It is Jeff Blair in for Bob McCowan, joined by David Amber, Dave Perkins, and Mr. Elliot Friedman. I'll go through the Primetime bullets here. Kind of an interesting. We talked about Usain Bolt earlier and the most whether or not he's the most irreplaceable athlete for sport, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Somebody mentioned Serena Williams. And the reason I want to bring that up is this is the first time, according to the people who run the U.S. Open, it's the first time that the women's final sold out before the men's final. Apparently, we're talking a couple of days before the men's final sold out. Now, I guess the sort of the Serena Williams story is probably the dominant line here. But there's been a lot of talk in the past, I would say the past year and a half, in a variety of media outlets about whether or not we don't overlook Serena Williams, or whether or not she doesn't get the credit she deserves for being the athlete she is, for being as dominant as she has been in her sport. I'm going to start with you, Elliot.
I don't know. I think it's just because people don't write or talk about tennis a lot up here. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Canada, when you talk about tennis, you tend to talk about the emerging Raonic or, you know, Bouchard and her struggles this year. And you talk a little bit about Pospisil and the Davis Cup, which, you know, Rogers has really mm-hmm. blown big when Canada's done well. But I think the only reason she doesn't get maybe the respect she deserves, because people don't talk a lot about tennis up here, but everybody knows how good she is. I mean, the reason that sold out before the men, she's going for the Grand Slam.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I love watching her compete. She is out there to kill people. She's a take no prisoners, no mercy. I'm a huge fan. And you know what? I think the other thing, too, is, you know, we're really not used to seeing, and it's changed a little bit in tennis, we're not used to seeing people in their early 30s be dominant in that sport. And the other top players, they are terrified of her.
Yeah.
I remember doing Rogers Cup, Dave. I remember once I think you interviewed Victoria Azarenka before she was going to play Serena. Mm-hmm. She looked terrified.
They're happy just to be on competing against her.
But I love watching her.
Maybe she's a victim of being too dominant. And what I mean by that is the expectation is she's going to win. And maybe that's taken a bit of the edge off the amount of accolades she receives, because it's like, well, it's Serena. She's so good.
And there really hasn't been kind of a counterweight. I don't know if that's the right word. I mean, I guess Maria Sharapova.
She destroyed for a while,
she took out Hingis. Hingis was the number one player when she came in. She destroyed Hingis. And she took out Sharapova in pretty good order. And then Azarenka's jumped up a few other, Djokovic, who's the Croatian girl or Serbian girl I'm thinking of?
Ivanovic.
They've had a few have come up, and she's knocked them all down. Yeah. Her sister?
Yeah. Well, Venus was more injuries as opposed to anything else, unfortunately.
How many times have you covered? Have you covered any event that she's been in, Dave?
No, I've always adhered to the no tennis rule. Pretty much the only time I ever covered, I covered Venus at the Athens Olympics, and there were 19 people in the seats because I went around and counted them. I remember those were the Olympics that nobody went to. Remember?
Right, the Athens Olympics,
and there was Venus, 19 people playing. But no, I she's the best ever, in my opinion.
I think the thing about Serena, too, is that, and I've seen her in, you know, obviously media conference and stuff, she can be very intimidating. Like, I've seen, like, there's not too many athletes I've seen who've made reporters in open settings shrink away from them. I've seen reporters, like, she'll say, "I'm sorry, what was your question?" And she might not have legitimately heard it. And I've seen reporters, like, just like, "Oh, I'm sorry, forget it." Like, she's intimidating. And I think the amount of people that she really lets see a side of herself that she does, that she, you know, there's the rest of her life and stuff like that, she keeps it very limited. So I think it's hard to get to know her sometimes.
Yeah, I just, I think it's really fascinating that, you know, that the women's final is selling out. And I guess part of the reason for that, too, is the fact that
Grand Slam,
she's an American. The Americans want to see, you know, they want to see a bit of history. Kobe Bryant appeared on Shaquille O'Neal's podcast. The full interview is going to be broadcast Monday, Dave, in case you're interested. Yeah. And in it, he says that he fully didn't appreciate Shaq until he was saddled with Dwight Howard during the 2012-2013 season. Both of these guys apparently go on to say they wished they'd kept their mouth shut and continued to play together. Of course, there's the famous video of Shaq dancing and urging Kobe to, anyhow.
Harder to taste.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How could these
wouldn't
guys
have been near as much fun if they'd been nice to each other?
How good could they have been if they'd just?
Well, they won three titles in a row.
They won three. Was there more there?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Was there more there beyond the three?
And I don't know how you guys feel, but I always thought Shaq deserved a lot more blame than Kobe did. I really felt that
Shaq was much more a media friendly guy.
Shaq seemed to be the protagonist.
He was less serious about winning than Bryant was,
and that's what caused a lot of the friction. Yes. He saw him as this guy who does all these things outside of basketball and plays basketball on the side, and is, you know, arguably one of the most dominant centers we've ever seen. Whereas Kobe, I think, has a unilateral focus, and that was just basketball, basketball, basketball.
Yeah, And Shaq was the guy. He got hurt, and he didn't have his toe surgery until the beginning of next season. Right. He didn't have it in the summer. It's like you get injured on company time, you get your surgery on company time. And I think that, as much as anything else, was one of the reasons that the Laker dynasty didn't even go on longer.
There was an interesting article this year featuring Kobe. It was recently, actually, and it was about how he essentially doesn't have any friends in the NBA. He's kind of a lone soldier, and he just says, take me for what I am. I'm there to win. I'm trying to be great. I'm not going to pretend and say, hey, it's okay, you didn't do your best, don't worry about it. He says, I'm not that guy, and he really is unabashed about it.
Well, that footage of him in practice, when he's just ripping into guys and like throwing the ball around and
Jordan was like
bombing everybody.
Yeah.
Jordan was like that.
He takes a page right out of MJ's book.
You ever read about Jeff Sellers? Like Jordan crushed that guy. He was a pretty high draft pick. There were a few guys that Jordan crushed.
But I think he tests them. I think Kobe wanted to test guys. And if you can't handle it, you know where the door is.
The next guy. Yeah. We'll get the next guy.
We also saw this week a lot of concern being expressed in the NFL about the number of players going down with significant injuries in the preseason. And a lot of people are asking questions about whether or not, frankly, the preseason is too long. We had Joe Theismann on. Joe Theismann doesn't think it's too long.
It's a league that wants to add games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But isn't this, you can see why the players aren't exactly running to add games to the schedule, aren't
they? New York Giants lost four safeties in 31 hours?
31 hours, yeah.
Four safeties for the year.
Jordy Nelson. I mean, it's a violent sport by nature. Inherently, injuries are part of the sport. There's no real way around this. You can't say to NFL guys or football guys in general, go out there, but don't hit anyone too hard. Right. And don't get hit too hard.
Otherwise, it's the Pro Bowl.
Yeah. It doesn't work. I mean, unless you just say scrap the preseason, you guys figure it out amongst yourselves, but they're not going to give up the gate on that. Right?
I was going to say, what about two games and then those controlled scrimmages or whatever they're called?
I do think if I was an owner, I would say we play too many preseason games. Because of the amount of injuries, I would cut one. But I think the NFL 18 games is insane. And some people say to me, well, the CFL plays 18 games. There's a difference. And I remember it's the size of the players. Like the CFL players, they're just as fast. They're strong. They're great athletes, but they're smaller.
Yeah.
You know, a linebacker in the NFL is a defensive back in the CFL. The other way around. Yeah, right. Sorry, the other way around. Like, the NFL players are all bigger. Like, the CFL linemen are NFL linebackers. You can't play in 18 games in National Football
running.
With their size.
Less running. And
can't
then
do it.
I agree, but I do, and I think the game's different as well. A yard off the ball, less running plays, which is going to be less violent collisions generally, is certainly group setting. So, I mean, there are some differences as well, but 18 games seems like you're asking for more trouble.
I think all leagues play too many exhibition games. I mean, remember the Leafs used to play like 9 a year. I'd be like,
spring training. You could cut 2 weeks off spring training and people.
But that's just about the pitchers.
Yeah.
And I don't imagine for a moment that there's one NFL coach who doesn't have the lineup made up in his head before the first exhibition game.
Mm-hmm.
And all the exhibition games do is confirm his decision. I don't think they change them. Maybe the odd time, but for the most part, you cut a game out of that, the coaches wouldn't care.
We had a couple of gentlemen pass away in the past couple of days who, they're important in their sport, maybe for a variety of different reasons. One of them, Daryl Dawkins, the first player to come out of high school and go right into the NBA, passed away at the age of 58. Remember about Daryl Dawkins? Shattered backboards, I guess, is the thing everybody remembers.
It was one of my favorites.
I
was a Sixer fan growing up, and I was really upset when he left the Sixers the year before they finally won that elusive championship
with Julius and
Moses Malone. And he actually took a bit of the blame for it because they just couldn't handle a lot of the inside players on the Lakers, and Dawkins was supposed to be that guy, but he was more of a flamboyant showman.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved his game because he was fun.
Yeah,
you know, before Shaq was ripping down the backboards, it was Daryl Dawkins ripping down the backboards.
And of course, the whole thing with what was that line about the bun roasting backboard breaking? I mean, he had that whole bun roasting backboard breaking something. Great.
The one thing I didn't realize is that one where they asked him to name it.
Yeah,
he said, "Give me a couple days," because he had to think about the name for it. I didn't realize that until I read that yesterday. So they said because he used to name his dunks.
Yeah.
And they said, well, what's this one called? He says, like, give me a couple days. And he came up with the name. It was awesome.
And Stevie Wonder, of all people, who never obviously could see him play. Isn't that incredible? That's a crazy story.
That is amazing. And he actually ended up playing and coaching semi-pro in Winnipeg. And people there absolutely loved him. I mean, he was Daryl Dawkins.
He was a quotable guy. He was a good player, not a great player.
No, he was a good player. He was a good player.
He was never a great player, but he was a tremendous quote.
Yeah.
Funny guy.
Yeah.
Good sense of humor. And
like a poor man's Barkley? Would that be a good assessment? Yeah, like not as good a player, but I mean player, like a fun,
but you know,
guy.
But Barkley wasn't, as a player, wasn't that glib, lovable.
Not as much, I don't think.
Now.
Could be both.
Yeah.
He, like, you know what? They always joke that he was like, he had an expiration date. He went to your city, you loved him for a few years.
Briefly.
And then you're like, oh, we got to get rid of this guy. Yeah. It happened everywhere he went.
See, I always associate Daryl Dawkins, too. I mean, I wasn't a Sixers fan, but I loved Julius Erving. And to me, that's when basketball started to get likable. Mm. I liked that because there was this tremendous influx of personalities, lots of talented players, but a tremendous influx of personalities as well. Yeah. And of course, Al Arbor. Passed away today, and at the age of 82.
Yeah, and, you know, he was a really popular guy. A few years ago, you know, his coaching career ended just shy of 1,500 games coached, so the Islanders got permission from the league to have him coach to get to 1,500, and we did a piece for that back at Hockey Night. And, you know, the two of the guys I really spoke to about it were Glenn Healy and Kelly Rudy, both of whom played for him, and they loved him. And, you know, the thing that they both talked about was when you were going good, he cracked the whip. Like, he was like, okay. But when you were going really badly, either personally or as a team, you know, that's when he showed he really cared about you. Like, I can't remember if it was Glenn or Kelly. They said that they were having a terrible stretch. And, you know, the practice was called for the morning. And they were on a bad stretch and they couldn't win games. They get on the ice and Arbor looks at them and he goes, okay, whoever got lucky last night, go do a lap. And a couple of them started laughing at the lap and he goes, get off the ice. And they won their next game. Like that was, and the other thing too is, so we did that piece and what I remember was, you know, Kelly Rudy said, tell Al that, you know, I have a father, but if it wasn't but my second father was Al Arbor. And so I led up to that in the interview and I said that and he couldn't answer. He waved his hand at the camera and asked that the camera be turned off. And his hand was really quivering as he did it. And he started bawling. And, you know, when he got composed again, he said that, you know, the one thing I never really knew is, did all these players understand how much I cared about them and how much they meant to me? Because when you're the coach, you have to be on them all the time. And I remember how much it meant to him that Kelly thought that. And Dave, I know Glenn went down there, as you mentioned, Glenn and Pat Flatley and a few guys went down this year to see him because they wanted him to know that those guys weren't forgetting.
Yeah, we were talking about this as well, him as a player.
I can remember
wearing eyeglasses, blocking shots.
He was
wearing
a shot blocking defense, stay at home defenseman. I bet you he didn't score 20 goals in 20 years, but he was a shot blocking defenseman who wore eyeglasses.
Yeah,
and terrific defender. I'm old enough to remember him winning Stanley Cups for the Toronto Maple Leafs, people are out there saying that never happened.
Never happened.
Ooh, what?
Never happened.
Next thing you're going to tell us, you're going to tell us the Jays won a World Series one year, for God's sake.
He's, I mean, he's right there on the Mount Rushmore of NHL coaches.
He has to be,
right there.
With Scotty and Toe Blake.
And those teams were just, that he coached those Islanders teams. It was like the
19 playoff series in a row they won.
That is incredible.
That's insane.
That's great.
When you put it in those terms.
Yeah. Guys, it was great you do this. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
That is the Friday Roundtable. You'll join us again, Mr. Amber, at some point.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Be great to have you. For Elliot Friedman, Dave Perkins, David Amber, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us on the Friday Roundtable on Primetime Sports. Blue Jays baseball is next on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Sportsnet East, West, Ontario, and Pacific. Have a great weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday.